Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. And how are you?
Doing good, Russell. Yourself?
I'm back from North Dakota. I got the sand out of my shoes and been able to settle in here and watch some good hockey. And we're, it's the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's a good time of the year, although the Mets scored 12 runs in an inning tonight. I have to say that was pretty exciting. But we're still in the grips of a great hockey season.
Yeah. Yeah, I could also counter and say, hey, the Phillies are 13-10 or something, which I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You take your gift horses and you recognize that probably by July we'll all think back at fondly at this brief moment of light in the Phillies season. Or maybe they just surprise the hell out of us. Who the hell knows? I don't predict these things, especially when it comes to baseball.
Early.
Oh yeah,
it's early for baseball.
Early.
It's getting late. It's getting late for hockey. And speaking of late, we want to invite in our guest Ted Starkey from Newsday and many other places covering the Islanders, the Capitals, just everybody. Ted, how are you?
Good. It's a busy time of year.
It is. You're all around, man. You're writing stuff for the Tribune. You're writing stuff for Newsday. You're posting pictures of empty stadiums and arenas. You're just very busy.
Exactly. It's interesting. I did game one in Washington yesterday, and game three and four in Brooklyn lie ahead, and then game five back in Washington. So it could be a fun week.
Definitely, Ted. Definitely. Let's we might as well start digging in here on this first game between the Caps and the Penguins last night. Quite a matchup. Just about everything we would have expected from this series. What were some of your observations of game one?
Well, I definitely thought the Penguins came out. They really tried to use their speed against Washington. You can see right off the bat, they kind of took over the first couple minutes. Washington, I think after Ovechkin got the breakaway, because Washington was trying to counter, and they had a couple good chances, so Pittsburgh kind of, took their foot off the gas a little bit. But, overall, the Penguins are really skating fast. But the Caps made the most of the opportunities. Obviously, the game changer last night pretty much was TJ Oshie's goal in the second period. When he had passed the puck to himself, took it down, because the Caps were really reeling. They'd given up two quick goals, and it looked like all the air had come out of the building. And then all of a sudden, TJ Oshie comes in, scores the equalizer, a completely different game. But I think, you may see a little bit more defensive responsibility from the Penguins. I thought they probably, I think the Penguins like to get into track meets with teams, but I don't necessarily think Washington is a team you might want to, and especially after, Washington had that really sluggish series against the Flyers. It's kind of like I think they'll really enjoy playing an open ice game, and the Penguins probably have to get a little bit more responsible defensively, and especially with I still think Washington has the edge in goaltending, so they got to be very careful.
They do. I mean, Oshie's been picking up steam since, I want to say, the last two games of the Flyers series, so he's continued that. But I have to say, I was really getting nauseous yesterday of Mike Milbury just trying to force home the issue that Matt Murray gave up some sort of soft goal at the end. It's like, wait a minute, this kid's a rookie. He's going in there. He's matching Braden Holtby. That goal wasn't like it bled through his pad. Yes, it did go through, like, it went to the side of the net, but it certainly wasn't a soft goal. And I don't know how many times he was going to argue with Roenick, and I was really getting mad. And just, I usually don't even care anymore about Mike Milbury, but what did you think about that, Ted?
Well, I thought Murray played a really good game, because obviously if he doesn't make the two saves on the Ovechkin on breakaways, you're not in overtime. He'll lose in 60 minutes. I mean, I thought he played a pretty good game. I mean, it was kind of a strange goal. With the Penguins, you kind of got the sense in overtime that the Capitals were starting to take over the game a little bit. The Penguins were really relying on Letang back in the blue line, and I think you started to really see that because, the Penguins were really good in the second and third period, but I thought the Capitals were the better team in overtime, and they finally cashed in.
I know for me, I was seeing, I mean, if nobody's going to criticize any goals that Murray gave up, the one I would probably would have targeted more would have been the second Oshie goal. That was kind of a weird way that sort of caromed through his pad, more so than certainly the last than his hat trick goal. That to me, it was kind of odd to hear him sort of going off a little bit about that. I agree with Russ on that. My focus would have been more about the second goal than the first than the game winner.
Yeah, I mean, and overall, he played a really good game. I mean, like Russ was saying, it's going to be hard to expect. You know, the kid's got a lot of pressure on his shoulder because, you know, clearly the Penguins have gone from, in a couple months, have gone from, well, maybe it'll make the playoffs to now, you know, a lot of people consider them the Stanley Cup favorite right now. And, you know, it's a whole lot of pressure on a kid who, you know, first time out there. And, you know, the other interesting thing, you know, when you have a young goaltender, sometimes tape gets out. You know, I've seen goaltenders come out first 10, 15 games are really good. Then some of the shooters get to watch some of the videotape. I remember Semyon Varlamov in the original Penguin series in 2009. Basically, the Penguins started to watch tape, and you know they just shot everything under the crossbar, and you could just see the series change. So it'll be interesting with a young goalie how he reacts. You know, obviously, the Penguins have, you know, with Fleury out, they've kind of had to rely on Murray. He's been terrific, but you know, at some point, you wonder if it's the lack of experience is going to show.
I don't think that's the reason that the Penguins lose. I don't think it'll be that. I just like the Caps bottom two lines better than I like the Penguins. You know, I like the Beagles and the Chimeras better than I like the Kunockles, and I think too much is made of Connor Sheary, especially when Joe Micheletti does the broadcast. It's like, wait a minute. He's playing with Sidney Crosby. It's not like he's getting a point a game. He's fast. I get it. He's able to keep up with Crosby where Kunitz couldn't. But other than that, he's not showing off anything special. Maybe he could PK a little bit. But just way, way too much to me has been made of him. What's your thoughts on him?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, like, I know Russ and I, we were talking Philadelphia about, we were talking about Mike Richards in the bottom, the bottom two lines of the Caps. And, you know, I know you were talking that Richards wasn't quite the player he was, but, you know, this is the Capitals now. They're, you know, they don't need him to be the old Mike Richards. They need him before.
Right.
Basically need him to be better than Michael Latta. And, you know, I think with the Penguins, again, it's the same thing. You know, they have a bunch of kids in there, which is great, but, I mean, I really like the Capitals' bottom two lines. I mean, I think, you know, they really they're dangerous and they all can score. You know, they don't have to. It's interesting. I think in the Flyers series, you saw a lot. The Capitals were rolling four lines most of the series. They weren't shortening the bench, and they weren't relying on the Ovechkins and the Backstroms, you know, to get massive ice time. They were letting all the players play, and I think you're seeing that. And obviously, I think there's a benefit to that, you know, because the guys will be fresher, like particularly yesterday in overtime. You know, you see some of these guys that have a little bit more jump because they're not playing, you know, tons of minutes in regulation.
Ted, shifting gears a little bit to another team, obviously, which is an area of focus for you. The Islanders coming out of the gates, really firing out of the gates on down in Tampa, winning 5-3 over the Lightning. Lightning certainly a bit of a surprise though to see Ben Bishop get, you know, lit up as he was in that game, and obviously a lot of focus was on Shane Prince, who's a player that Russ certainly has trumpeted a lot from his, you know, from his junior days going into Ottawa, obviously. Islanders are maybe the one team, maybe a team that there are some areas where they really do match up favorably here against Tampa, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they got a lot of flack at the end of the year, you know, for not really playing up the last two regular season games, but you know, I thought before the playoffs, whoever crossed over in the Atlantic would get a really favorable matchup because, you know, you'd face a Florida team that didn't have a whole lot of playoff experience. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the Islanders series, they looked like, I mean, we'd all heard that Jaromir Jagr was just, you know, he looked exhausted and he was playing like he was exhausted. And they really needed him to, you know, have a chance to beat the Islanders. And then you get a Tampa Bay team, you know, they're without Stamkos and Strawman, and, you know, that's not quite the same team. You know, I think you could have made an argument for any of the four teams in the Atlantic to make a run of the Eastern Finals. But, you know, with Thomas Greiss playing really well, you know, and I think Tavares is interesting. He's one of those players that's I think every superstar is streaky, but I think Tavares is particularly streaky in the case of when he's really good, he may be the best player in the league. When he's not, he's almost completely invisible, but the last couple of games they've gotten a good John Tavares, and when he's on, he really can power that team.
Yeah, no question. Was there any feeling, aside from the Islander euphoria, that Bishop may have an injury? Because I don't think I've seen him play that lousy in a couple of years, and I'd have to say I'd have him on a pretty short leash next game because Vasilevskiy shut him down. I mean, maybe they're going to have to make a change if Bishop's not exactly on, just for the difference in goalie. Maybe the younger goalie is gonna prove better because they haven't faced him. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting. I mean, they really tip as a short turn, they that turnaround at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. It'll be interesting to see how they come out because, if they drop these two games at home, it could be pretty difficult to go to Brooklyn and have to win, four of the last five games of the series. The Islanders are playing. The thing that's interesting is they're a team that needed a little bit of confidence, and they got it from that Florida series. And obviously, Tampa went to the finals last year, but I think, obviously they know in the back of their minds they're still missing a key piece of the team with Stamkos out. It's interesting with him practicing this week. It almost kind of reminds you what you don't have. I'm sure it was kind of a boost mentally to have him on the ice, but at the same time you realize, your big guy is there, on the sidelines. And I'm very curious to see how it goes. I mean, I think Bishop, obviously looking pretty shaky, and I'm very curious. Although, even last year in the playoff run, he was a little bit banged up and he just didn't look right at some points of the playoffs last year. So you wonder if it's a little bit of that, like you were saying, maybe he's a little bit banged up. And, this time of year, a lot of players are banged up, so you just never know until, breakdown day when they actually say what's wrong with them.
One of the other things, too, with the Islanders in the series, and certainly going back to the last series as well, is just how much how well Thomas Greiss has played for them here in the postseason. I know you and I had talked a lot about Michael Neuwirth and how he basically kept Philadelphia in their series. For the Islanders, though, again, the man that who replaced obviously Neuwirth, Greiss, who goes from a backup to basically right now one of the key cogs in the Islanders' run right now.
It was funny. I was talking to some of the Pittsburgh writers yesterday about Greiss, because obviously, they remember from his days with the Penguin, and they were surprised how well he was doing. But honestly, all year long, Halak started the year injured. He got injured halfway through the year, and then got injured, in March. And it's been basically Greiss's team all year, and he's been. I don't think he's necessarily been spectacular, but he's been solid. For the bulk of the season, he's been very, very good in the playoffs, and that's probably better than he's been in the regular season. But, he's playing well. And the other thing that's interesting about the Islanders is last year they tended to play a game where they would try to put 40, 45 shots on net and kind of let Yaroslav Halak sit back and try to make saves. This year they're definitely playing a little bit more of a style where they're protecting the goalie. They're not giving taking as many shots, but they're also not giving up as many shots. And I think, obviously Greiss has been a beneficiary of that, but he's still been very good, and he's making the saves they need. And, again, it could be a case like Matt Murray. He's a little bit older, but, this is still a guy who's relatively inexperienced in the playoffs. Maybe at some point, the walls cave in a little bit. But for right now, he's playing really well.
Just curious, did you hear any whispers or feedback when the other day Mike Francesa, I guess out of frustration, which is ridiculous, for not getting Jack Capuano to come and guest in his studio, he when a caller called in, he called the Islanders a third-rate organization, which I thought was ridiculous. Like, the Islanders have been coming on my XM show for the last 10 years, never missed a show, always gave us a guest. And it's just, to me, I'm just curious if you heard any feedback from anybody in that building.
Well, as you and I both know, I think the Islanders have been dying for publicity the last couple of years. They've wanted to be, basically what's interesting in the move to Brooklyn is they've gone from being, they kind of had their niche in Long Island, and now they're they're basically lowest on the pecking order in New York City. Obviously it's been a big topic of conversation. And I think, I think people forget how you know, a lot of coaches get very focused. I've dealt, you know, we dealt with coaches in the playoffs, and it gets very difficult. It's very difficult to schedule this stuff, especially, you know, it was a quick, basically a quick turnaround. You know, they won Sunday, and they had to go down to Tampa on Wednesday. And, you know, at some point, you know, it's, I get that, you know, he's probably used to getting NFL coaches and other coaches in studio, but it's a lot different in hockey. And, you know, very fluid schedule. It's not easy to get these people this time of year.
Ted, just shifting focus away from the Eastern Conference and out west. Certainly, obviously, big news today out of Orange County as Bruce Boudreaux was released from his duties as head coach. Just some of your thoughts, because obviously you covered Bruce pretty extensively during his days with the Capitals. What were your thoughts on, you know, the fact that he's had really, you know, a remarkable regular season run? He's gotten himself to a conference final before, but again, just even with very talented rosters, there's moments where he seems to be having difficulty getting a team over the hump.
Yeah, it's interesting because I remember the Ducks were in Brooklyn in December, and that's about when it looked like he was going to get fired then, because, you know, the Ducks were languishing. They looked like they were going to miss the playoffs, and obviously they had the run to win the Pacific Division, but, you know, it's interesting with Bruce. I mean, he reminds me of one of those coaches. He's a lot like Ron Wilson. I think they're very effective for a certain amount of time, but I think after a certain amount of time, the players kind of tune out the message. And because he lasted almost 4 years in Washington, and he lasted just over 4 years in Anaheim. And it's just, you know, I think it was probably like about 30 or 40 more games he coached. It was, it's one of those, he plays a style that's very, it's, you know, the players like, it's very offensive. There's not a whole lot of structure to it. You know, I remember when he came to Washington, someone described it as basically, you know, throw out the puck and play. And, you know, his big problem in the playoffs, I think, has been he doesn't quite make the adjustments he needs to make. He, you know, he plays a very, not a very structural style. It's, you know, it's a very offensive type of style. And, you know, you'll see in these playoff series, he won't make these little adjustments. And I think at the end, it just ends up costing him. I mean, I think he's a terrific coach, and I think he'll be back behind the bench next year somewhere else.
Shouldn't be. You know, I got to stop you there. He shouldn't be. I mean, I'm tired of getting these, seeing these coaches get recycled. I think if I were a team looking for a coach, I would rather have someone like maybe John Stevens, give him a second chance. He's been in a good organization. You see how, like, Ron Hextall is doing as a GM coming out of the Kings organization. I think Stevens could do something. There's other guys out there. There's new guys out there. Like, just to recycle a guy like Boudreaux, you know, I mean, again, he's lost all these game sevens. Like, I would want to steer clear of that. And it's interesting with the Ducks because you look at the top three guys, and they have, like, a $64 million cap. They don't spend to the cap. And the top three guys make up like 27%. Actually, no, it was 37% of the cap. And Bob Murray signed those guys. He's got a lot of RFAs and UFAs on offense. Defense is locked up. Offense, not so much. You know, the Hagelin deal was bad. Like, I kind of wonder when he's going to be under scrutiny. And someone asked him today if sort of like what he felt like his part in this was, and I'm not sure he gave an answer. I didn't see any quotes on that. What's your feeling?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, with Boudreaux, I think he probably would be a decent fit for a team that needs, I kind of call him the training wheels coach, if you will. I think he'll take your team from being mediocre or average to being very good. I don't know if he can take your team to being great, but, you know, if you're a team like, let's say, Ottawa, you know, maybe it gets you in the playoffs. As for the Ducks, you wonder, because it's interesting with GMs. I was having a conversation about this. One of the things with Washington, I think that Brian McClellan really did, is he's been able to kind of step back and take a look at his team a little bit from a distance. And I think in some of these teams, the general managers, they kind of want to keep their core together when it may not necessarily be the right thing to do. And I think you see, you know, like a case like Jim Rutherford in Carolina let that team stay together too long. And I think at some point, you know, he's got to step back and say, look, there's something not right here. We may need to make a change. And, you know, is he going to actually do that or just try to, you know, keep winning the same way? You know, it's interesting. If you see, you know, some of these teams, they'll make the changes they need to, and others will just try to keep adding on to the players they have, and that doesn't always work.
Ted, I got to ask you, I mean, in past years, I've and I think many of us have always looked at the San Jose Sharks and have wondered, you know, and picked them potentially to go all the way to the final, and they've always had always seemingly had their struggles. They bring in Pete DeBoer as their new head coach this year. They go up against the Los Angeles Kings in the first round, do an outstanding job for beating that series, beating the Kings 4-1 in that series. Now they're going up against Nashville. Is this, in your mind, is this the San Jose roster as it's constructed? Can they get themselves to the finals here? Can they get through?
I think so. I mean, you know, obviously, I think not only beating the Kings, but, you know, now with the Blackhawks losing, you're really getting, you know, we were talking earlier about the Islanders not facing teams that have had a whole lot of playoff experience. You know, same thing with the Sharks. You're not getting, you know, Nashville, St. Louis, Dallas, you know, in recent years, they haven't had a lot of playoff success either. So you're kind of, you know, it kind of was like for the Sharks the last couple of years, you'd be bedeviled with all these teams with, you know, a lot of playoff experience, and they knew how to dig deep, but, you know, they're probably in a favorable matchup against Nashville. You know, St. Louis, Dallas would be interesting because obviously those two teams try to play a little bit more up-tempo style, which, you know, the Sharks could probably play, but they probably should be a little bit more responsible. But, you know, this could be their year to get to the final, finally. You know, they've got a good team. You could probably, it's probably like the Atlantic Division. You could probably make an argument for any of the four teams left to make the final, but the Sharks certainly have a good chance of making it on their own.
It's a wide open year. I actually have Nashville and Dallas this round, but, you know, for the non-conventional, non-Corsi kind of stat, I think, you know, San Jose's beards are going to slow them down. What do you think?
Oh, you just won't look at Joe Thornton's beard. It's crazy. He looks like a mountain man. You know, good guest on Grizzly Adams next week. But, it's crazy.
Did you see actually that there was a black cat made it out onto the ice in San Jose?
No.
I'm trying to figure that out.
Yeah,
had to be
check the video. Yeah, the video on that, and I'm completely convinced that that Joe Thornton hit it underneath his beard. I'm almost convinced of it. I say he got it in the road. Just say, okay, let's get all of our playoff ghosts out of ourselves. I'm gonna bring in a black cat, hide in my beard, and throw him out on the ice. No, if you see the video, it's hysterical. There was an actual black cat on the ice. I thought it was.
Someone pointed out it's actually in front of the Sharks bench too. So maybe it was the Predators who brought it in. You know.
If this were the Chicago Cubs, they would worry. I don't know if the Sharks will worry. That's pretty good. So, looking at going back to the Cap series, because that you have to believe they're going to go with Murray still. But do you get any feeling like Marc-Andre Fleury now is just sitting out, waiting to replace Murray, or do you think he's still banged up and actually can't play?
It's weird with concussions. I the one thing about a concussion is basically you have the multiplier effect. You know,
yeah.
Every time you get a concussion, it's worse than it was the last time, and it's easier to get one. And you really have to wonder if they're very concerned that he's going to get hit again because, you know, he was obviously at the end of last round. He looked like he's practicing and almost ready. And you just wonder maybe if there's a little bit of gamesmanship. You know, maybe they wanted the Rangers to think he was playing. But, at this point, you wonder if they're worried about risking his long-term health because, you know, they haven't played him and, you know, it looks like they're going to go with Murray. I mean, maybe if they go down, but then again, you know, as I said, it's hard to tell with concussions because there's such a serious injury, and you know, you don't want to one bad hit, especially a series against Washington. You know, they'll crash the net, and you know, they'll play a very physical style. You know, at some point they'll be headhunting or you know, trying to take shots high, and you know, that's a very dangerous place to be with a goalie with a concussion.
Speaking of dangerous moments, what were your thoughts on the on what happened with Tom Wilson and Cheary with the knee on knee hit?
Obviously, Tom Wilson, you know, he kind of had an interesting game. You know, earlier in the first period, he was mocking the Penguins on their bench, and then he had the hit. You know, obviously, I think the NHL passed out that fine just as kind of a warning. I mean, obviously, it's monetarily, it's not a real deterrent, but I think it's kind of putting him on notice that we've got our eyes on you. You know, he's had a couple moments during the playoffs where he's been, you know, really crossing the, really pushing the line, and you know, I think the league is finally saying, look, you know, you better be careful or we're actually going to suspend you. But, I mean, I you always hate to see the knee on knee, and it's always very dangerous. And, you know, clearly he wants to play a physical style. Clearly he's a kid who's amped up, but, you know, he's got to watch himself because, you know, someone's going to get hurt.
I'll tell you, I'll give my feeling on it. I watched it a bunch of times, and I think, again, I used to see Brandon Prust kind of graze goalies and just slightly touch them, and this way they'd sort of get it in their head. And I saw the way he was sort of going towards the bench, and I think he meant to graze them and just got him a little bit more than that, and even kind of turned around afterwards, and I think he kind of looked like, wow, I didn't think that was going to happen. And I think that's why he didn't get suspended. I think he was just trying to intimidate him. What do you think?
Yeah, and also, you know, it may be like the Shen effect, you know, the suspension that Shen got for the hit on Oshie. I don't necessarily think it's just the hit on Oshie. I think it's kind of, you know, accumulative for his, you know, for the cross-check to Kuznetsov. You know, I think that was part of it. You know, the NHL won't say it, but I think they do kind of, you know, keep a running tab of what you do. And you wonder, as I said, with Wilson's had a couple close calls where you thought at least he would get fined, and I think at this point, I think the league just wants to send him a message that he's going to be a lot more careful.
Ted, just pretty much to wrap up with regards to the from your memories of the Caps and the Flyers series, your overall impressions of what you saw out of Philadelphia in that first round series versus Washington. I mean, we knew that going into that the Flyers were fortunate enough to have made the postseason. They had obviously some help with Boston kind of falling apart there at the very end. If you're looking from your perspective, from sort of the outside looking in terms of how they played in that series and how you're projecting them going forward?
You have 2.5 minutes.
I thought the Flyers were pretty I think the biggest impression I got from them is they looked like a team that had basically spent most of their energy trying to make the playoffs. You know, I'd seen them down the stretch, and they were very impressive. I got the sense that, you know, their tank was on empty. You know, one of the reasons I think Michael Neuvirth was so effective is he didn't play much down the stretch. He only played that meaningless game in Brooklyn at the end of the year. So it was kind of a fresh, you know, a fresh goaltender was able to handle all those shots. But going forward, I mean, I think Ron Hextall's done a really good job. I mean, he was handed a roster that was very expensive and not very effective. And I think he's done a nice job of trying to cut down, you know, some of the excess and, you know, a lot of the, you know, a lot of good young kids in the system. And I would expect it to be pretty active in the offseason trying to make some more, you know, moves to kind of bolster the lineup. I mean, I think they have a nice core. And I think Hextall will do probably similar stuff that he helped do in Los Angeles. And I think they've got a pretty good nucleus, and I would expect them to be a playoff team, probably not having to rely on a stretch to do so. I would see them probably second or third in the Metro next year, barring any major changes.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Ted, we really appreciate you coming on. You always have a lot of energy. I did just see the black cat. I hope somebody adopts it. You could see the cat was scared. So, but again, thanks so much. Everybody should catch you on
Absolutely.
Twitter. What's your Twitter handle again?
Big Ted Starkey.
See, very easy.
Or black cat.
I like that. Or black cat. You can hashtag black cat. It's all good.
Yeah, always a pleasure to talk to you guys.
Thanks, Ted. And
Ted.
We'll be reading your stuff as you go along here.
Awesome.
Take care.
All
right, Ant. So far, so good here. We're getting ready to head out, too. You were right about Brandon moving on. I think Seattle's up 3-0, so I think they're going to end up playing Seattle.
Yeah, Seattle, I think. If not, I think Seattle. I thought maybe Seattle won their series. I got to double check on
that.
But I think I think that's going to be the WHL final there between those two. So
yeah, interesting.
Again, so
it'll be interesting.
Certainly, even from Flyer fans' perspective, they're keeping an eye on Ivan Provorov, obviously, and how he's doing as he gets postseason experience. If they can win the next series, then he could be looking at potential Memorial Cup experience if Brandon's able to get that far.
Yep, I agree. And that's going to end this off the post, and we'll catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.
Everyone has a story to tell. Take John. He can see all the films he wants, whenever he wants, at Cineworld. From Captain America Civil War to Bad Neighbours 2. He gets 10% off all his cinema snacks. Fresh popcorn, Tango Ice Blast, you name it. Plus 25% off at some of his favourite restaurants, like Pizza Hut. That's John's unlimited story. Start yours today when you join Cineworld Unlimited from just $16.90 a month. Love cinema? Join the club. Sign up today at cineworld.com.